Thank you, Vaughn, for bringing us Headlines Lagos. I am Sandra Ezekwesili. What will the post-subsidy era mean for Nigerians at the pump? The price and supply of petrol have been on everybody's mind from the moment that Bola Tinubu said subsidy is gone in his inaugural speech. Yesterday's big hard fact, the 2023 federal budget made provision for petrol subsidy until the end of June, which means that money has been voted and allocated to provide petrol at the fixed pump price for 25 more days. And yet, the NNPC has raised prices because they say that they haven't seen that money yet. Now, this is one of the issues that we're going to talk about today, as well as the future of petrol supply and petrol prices in a world without subsidy. I've got one oil and gas industry expert joining me on the show today to tell you what's happening, to tell you what to expect. My guest is a lawyer in the oil and gas sector. You may remember that he was our guest when we broke down the Petroleum Industry Act. At the time, it was still a bill. Now it's an act. And he helped us break it down at the time. Adeoye Adefulu, thank you so much for joining us on Hard Facts.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And Lagos is in the live studio today, so feel free to watch live. Facebook, Nigeria Info 99.3. YouTube, Nigeria Info FM. All right, so I know, of course, that you have questions. I know that you have opinions about subsidy removal, et cetera, et cetera. So feel free to call. Feel free to share your thoughts. Feel free to ask your questions. I have actual experts in the room who will be answering those questions for you. Now, Adeoye, first of all, the 2023 federal budget allocated money for the subsidy up until the end of June, right? And if that's the case, of course, you're not the spokesperson for NNPC, but why has the NNPC raised the pump price a month early?
So let's talk about what the subsidy is first. And thank you for your question. I think this is obviously a really important issue for everybody. If you don't have a car, you're getting into public transportation and prices have skyrocketed. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to understand what's causing all this. So why have they raised it? And this question was asked to, again, I'm not the spokesperson for for NNPC, but the president himself, when he was at his inaugural speech, or during his inaugural speech last week, was very clear about subsidy being gone. His words were, subsidy is gone. And here's the situation with the budget, right? The budget is a plan for our expenditure and the income that is to come. Mm-hmm. It is also, that budget has to be funded. So there has to be somewhere where that revenue, where the resource is going to come for to fund every activity within the budget. I think from what I heard from the GMD over the week, last week, was that it hasn't been funded at least for the purpose of their the subsidy. And even beyond that, even the subsidy payments for previous months in 2023 has not been funded. Mm. So I think in summary, what I see is that the fight for or fight against continuation of the subsidy has been going on for quite a while.
Yes.
And clearly, the executive at the time had not demonstrated the political will to end the subsidy. Mm. With the president's statement, categorical statement, that the subsidy was now over, was gone. Mm-hmm. The leeway to actually implement the final removal of the subsidy was there for the taking.
Mm. Lagos, again, join the conversation, 0700-993-993-993. Now, a lot of my questions are NNPC related, which is sad because he's not the spokesperson for the NNPC. However, the MD of the NNPC, Mele Kyari, says that the federal government, like you said, has not paid any subsidy money this year. Yes. And they're owing them 2.8 trillion naira. Yes. He claims that the NNPC has been absorbing the subsidy cost. Is there any way to corroborate whether this is true or not?
You're asking a question that I truly cannot answer. So let me, I'll speak in very general terms.
Right.
I think the first thing is the way in which the subsidy regime has worked, mm-hmm. because NNPC for a few years now has been the sole importer of petroleum, well, of PMS
yes.
in particular. Mm-hmm. Not petroleum products.
PMS.
But PMS in particular has been the sole importer for PMS.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the reason that's been the case was previously you had quite a number of different importers. NNPC was one of them. You had the major marketers, you had the smaller marketers, you had just all traders that were importing.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it worked then is you would import petroleum products into the country, PMS in particular. You would then sell that off, but you will only get paid sort of the lower threshold price. And the perspective was that you were going to be reimbursed
mm-hmm.
By the government for that shortfall
mm-hmm.
that you'd experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of, and you remember, you know, I think it was in 2012, we had that dramatic end the subsidy sort of riots.
Mm-hmm.
And then subsequently we had a probe into, you know, what the subsidy payments were
mm-hmm.
about.
Mm-hmm.
I think a few people went to jail. But the bottom line was the government stopped feeling comfortable about, you know, non-state players, so anybody outside of NNPC being able to import petrol.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way it works is NNPC does a lot of things. It's not just petroleum
petrol,
importation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's a small part of what it does.
NNPC does, yes.
And so the way it works is NNPC brings in the product, right?
Mm-hmm.
It also generates certain income for itself and ultimately for the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And how it's supposed to be set or netted off
mm-hmm.
is that whatever shortfall it gets from not getting the full price of the product that he has brought in,
mm-hmm.
it will take that shortfall from the revenue has made from other sources,
mm-hmm.
such as selling crude oil or you know, any other activity that is involved in.
Mm-hmm.
So on paper, and I read the FAC report, and that's the Federal Allocation
mm-hmm.
Committee
mm-hmm.
report
mm-hmm.
That NNPC issued, I think it was in August. And on paper, you could see it had built up the deficit based on that
mm-hmm.
on that presentation
mm-hmm.
had built up to over a trillion at the time.
Right.
So because, and you have to compound the problem is compounded by the fact that revenue also, there was also
shrinking
a revenue
shortfall at the time, right.
You know, so, so I cannot speak for whether those figures are accurate. I'm not an accountant. I haven't looked through the books,
mm-hmm.
but that's how the system works. And
mm-hmm.
in that system, you can clearly see there is potential
mm-hmm.
for a shortfall to occur.
Mm-hmm. But you did mention earlier, and this is something that I've talked about quite a bit on the show, that the money has been budgeted. So, of course, we need to find money
yeah.
to fund the budget, right? NNPC is claiming they haven't been paid. What could possibly be the reason why the federal government isn't paying?
So you've got to look at it from, again, I am just looking from the outside
yes.
and trying to sort of understand the potential challenges that
yes.
might be there.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have enough resources, I'm assuming, like, as it works in households,
mm-hmm.
in certain cases, it will work the same way for the government.
Okay.
So where do I expend my limited resources first? Do I use it to pay back an NPC that is 100% owned by me?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I use it for example, for healthcare or a contractor that has nothing to do with
mm-hmm.
me? So if you have scarce resources, which we do.
Mm-hmm. My callers are going to fight you. They fight me every time I say that.
We'll discuss that. But if you look at resources per capita, we are definitely in the scarce resource framework.
Mm-hmm.
If you add scarce resources, you've got to look at how you allocate those resources.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume that in determining whether to allocate the resources to NNPC or to other entities,
mm-hmm.
It has chosen the government then chose to allocate it away from NNPC.
But that's interesting because NNPC is no longer owned entirely by the government. They are now operating, and you have an interesting smile, and I wonder why.
I do. I'm waiting for you to...
They're now allegedly operating like a public company, a commercial organization.
Yeah.
And as such, what worked before July 2022 shouldn't be working in the first 6 months of... First 6 months of 2023.
Right.
Right?
So, theoretically, yeah? And I say theoretically because, so the Petroleum Industry Act talked about the establishment of a corporation, the NNPC Limited.
Mm-hmm.
It was meant to be created under CAMA. And one of the things that the Petroleum Industry Act said was NNPC had to operate as a commercial entity.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? It means that it should be taking decisions about what ventures it wants to go, and those decisions will be taken by the board on a strategic level and executed by the management team.
Mm-hmm.
It is still 100% owned by the country, though.
Mm-hmm.
100% owned by the federal government, but it's meant to have some independence in taking the commercial decision.
Mm-hmm.
But the same PIA also said that NNPC Limited will be a supplier of last resort. And the position of the supplier of last resort is essentially you have to guarantee, as it were, the adequacy of supply to the country, ensure that there is supply into the country.
Mm.
Now, that guarantee for adequacy of supply was meant to go on for a period of 6 months. So from August 2021 through to February 2022.
Okay.
And that's when the subsidy regime was meant to have been ended.
Yes.
Because the same PIA provides that petroleum products should be sold at a commercial rate.
Right.
So same PIA provides for it.
Right.
So NNPC is theoretically meant to be commercial, but what the government effectively did was to extend that supplier of last resort. I don't know by which authorization. It's certainly not by law.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's a directive to that effect, but it effectively extended the operator supplier of last resort.
Mm-hmm.
And so NNPC was then in a position not to refuse the request to supply PMS in particular to the nation. So that's the challenge. That's the paradox that they were facing, frankly, as an entity.
Lagos, join the conversation. 0700-993-993-993-01465-7190. Now, I think this is a good time to talk about NNPC's direct purchase, direct supply. Direct supply program, DPDS. Explain how that works.
So, Sandra, you've got me sort of trying to explain the inner workings of NNPC.
Yes.
So, to the best of my knowledge, the DSDP is a direct supply, direct purchase regime. And essentially, there is an acknowledgement within the system that Nigeria required something like 400,000 barrels of oil per day for its domestic consumption. And this is roughly based off the capacity of the three refineries that we had, the Port Harcourt, Warri, Kaduna, Port Harcourt 1 and 2, Warri, Kaduna. So about 400-something thousand barrels of oil per day capacity. And so effectively, NNPC was required to sell off the crude oil related to that capacity and sell that off. And essentially what the direct supply, direct purchase regime, how it worked was that it was kind of in exchange for petroleum products.
Okay.
So you have the right to buy crude from me, and you will supply me in exchange petroleum products. Obviously, there's some mechanism to work out the value that comes through for the direct supply, direct purchase.
Okay. Region. Okay. All right. We have people calling. Let's talk to them before they riot. 99.3, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What's your name?
My name is Ayomide.
Ayomide, welcome. Talk to me.
Yeah. So I just joined the program. There's a question I would like to ask about our NNPC.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand the subsidy of this thing, how it runs. Like, I want to ask, is it possible that NNPC can get this petrol, since we don't have a refinery that is working that can refine it, get a cheap petrol from abroad, and then sell it directly to the marketers instead of feeding them subsidy, you understand me?
Instead of what?
Instead of feeding the subsidy to these people that are third party or I'll say private sellers, why can't the government itself buy the petrol from wherever they are buying it themselves? Then instead of paying subsidy, they sell it at a cheaper rate to these guys.
But that's what... Okay. All right. Thank you very much for calling. Yes. Talk to me. I'll tell you.
You are going to answer the questions.
Yeah, but you're the expert
so,
in the room.
No. I mean, look, so the way it works, and I think that's the premise I'll use to answer the question. The way it works is that NNPC goes off to Holland, to the Netherlands, to purchase petroleum products, PMS in particular. It purchases those products and then has it delivered to Nigeria. So there's a price that it pays effectively for that purchase. Again, this is in general terms because there's the DSDP arrangement as well, which is not, you know, fed through on this mechanism.
Yeah.
But effectively, the subsidy or whatever subsidy we're talking about is not an actual payment, certainly not to not to a foreign entity or to an independent petroleum company. Right now, it is a mechanism within the NNPC structure, and it sets off or nets off whatever NNPC is meant to, you know, remit in whatever fashion to the government. It nets that off from, you know, the balance that it hasn't been paid. That's essentially how it works. So I'm not sure that the mechanism will be anything different from
what he has just described.
From what he's just described.
Yeah.
I think the bottom line is what we have to appreciate is that the cost of petroleum products, the cost of PMS is expensive. And I think for those who actually buy diesel, for example, once the Ukraine war started, we all immediately felt the impact of, you know, diesel and the demand and the supply dynamics in the market.
Mm-hmm.
We immediately felt the impact.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, we've been at 165 and it went up maybe to 190. But the reality is that during that time, during that period when 160, when we started with 165, the market, the world market moved significantly. Crude oil, which forms, I mean, from about 50-something, 59% of the composition of the cost of petroleum products to up to 68%, you know, was selling for 120-something at a certain point. And so, you know, clearly the dynamics had changed, and that was not reflected in the pricing regime, on the local pricing regime. It was kept stable. And so it's a very, I mean, even if you wanted to retain subsidy in any form or the other, you had a situation where, you know, the actual landing price was something like, you know, 450, and you were selling for 185. It was more than double of the actual cost of buying. You know, in any world, it's not a sustainable regime. And the way the subsidy regime seemed to work was that it was going to remain that price even if you were buying petroleum products at 1,000 or even 10,000.
So the government was supposed to offset that cost for
you. It's not a sustainable position. It's not something that you can do in the long term.
So I take it that you are in support of a removal of subsidy.
So it's a... I'm trying to avoid, you know, the audience shooting off my head. Let me first let me first say that I empathize seriously with the challenges that people are facing. I understand, you know, I have, you know, I myself am facing challenges, but it's in a different way, and everybody is. I think the issue about fuel subsidy and the lack, the fact that it wasn't sustainable has been clear for a long time.
For a long time.
2012, when this subsidy sort of riots happened, it was clear even then. I think, you know, people come with different theories. Some people say, you know, this is the only dividend we get as an oil producing country, and I understand that, but the reality is that income revenue was not as high, and it's not been consistently high. And the value, I mean, we were in a situation in the oil and gas industry, and I've sort of been in this industry for, I don't know, for a number of years. Let me not age myself. But whenever, because the industry is a cyclical industry, it goes up, it comes down, it goes up, it comes down.
Yeah.
And through my working life in the industry, it was always good times for us, for business people, whenever the oil industry price, whenever the prices of crude oil went up. But we were now in a situation where crude oil price going up meant that subsidy was going up. And therefore, whatever gains we were getting from crude oil price increases was being lost in the subsidy regime.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have sufficient money to fund our budget. We are, when you lose, when you're spending so much money and you're borrowing lots of money to cover such an expense, what that means is that even if you were to borrow, which is, you know, there's nothing in principle wrong with borrowing, you are not borrowing to fund things that can generate revenue for you in the future. You're not borrowing to help education. You're not borrowing to fund infrastructure development. You're not borrowing to fund healthcare. These are critical things that suddenly, you know, if we talk about the fact that we have such a huge population, the advantage of a population is not just the number. It is having an educated, a healthy, and aware population. That's where you leverage.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at countries rather, with population that is towards our area, that are doing well, they are leveraging off the expertise of their people. They're leveraging off the fact that their people are now seen as a value to other countries as well. And we need to be able to invest in our people,
in our human resources,
in order to be able to do that.
All right, Lagos, we have a break coming up. I see all the phone lines lit, so obviously lots of questions for Adeoye. Adeoye is my guest on the show today. He is a lawyer in the oil and gas sector. He was our guest when we were breaking down the petroleum industry bill. It was a bill at the time, it's an act now, and he did such a great job. We brought him back to come and talk to you about subsidies. Adeoye Adefolu will be here when we come back from this break. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. This is Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info. And coming up after the break, let's talk about refineries. Refineries get a lot of what's the word I'm looking for now? A lot of faith from Nigerians, you know. Lots of people who listen to this show, who have engaged me on the subject of subsidy removal, believe that if our refineries were up and running, these problems we're having right now with the cost of PMS in particular, we wouldn't have them. Let's see what Adeoye thinks after the break. Again, Nigeria Info 99.3. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. Don't go away.
More conversation, more talk, more right after this. We're back.
We're back.
We're back.
We're back.
We are back.
We're back on 99.3 Nigeria Info. Indeed, we are. I am Sandra Ezekwesili, and I've got on the show with me today a lawyer in the oil and gas sector. His name is Adeoye Adefolu, and today we're talking about what the post-subsidy era will mean for you as a Nigerian at the pump. We've addressed so much. We've talked, for instance, about the budget for subsidy. We've talked about why perhaps NNPC isn't getting their subsidy money like they're claiming. We've talked about what the direct purchase, direct supply program is. We've talked about quite a number of things. And if you missed the first half of the show, you can catch it on any platform where you stream your podcasts. Just search for Hard Facts and listen to this particular episode. Now, before the break, I mentioned that we were going to talk refineries, and let's get right into that. Yeah? Okay. Before the president left office, I'm talking about President Buhari now, he commissioned the Dangote refinery. The impression from the government is that it will start producing very soon. But we're getting reports that it may not start outputting petrol until the end of the year or next year or even 2025. Again, he's not Dangote's spokesperson or NNPC spokesperson or the government's spokesperson. But how soon will the Dangote refinery start putting petrol into the market in significant quantities?
I have no idea.
Okay.
But I think the bottom line is it's not this month for sure.
Okay.
And, you know, we're all sort of waiting and expectant. Mm-hmm. But what are the things you need to look out for? You need to make sure that the facilities have been properly commissioned, and that is a process. You need to look out for, you know, contracts for the purchase of crude, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
You need to look out for a number of key activities that will indicate to you that the process around finalization of the refinery and producing petroleum products is coming, you know, and the market doesn't suggest that those things have
been
done
yet. However, Dangote himself has spoken about the refinery selling its petrol in the international market.
Yes.
He wants both the Forex and the great prices. And we've now heard NNPC MD Mele Kyari say that Dangote's petrol will not affect the prices that we're currently seeing in the market.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you have those who say that Dangote Refinery should sell its fuel at lower prices since there won't be landing costs. And I have to ask you, and then you also have those, because Mele Kyari also said that we're expecting the Port Harcourt refinery to come online by the end of this year. And he's also saying that even when that comes online, fuel prices will not be cheaper than what we're currently seeing at the moment.
Yeah.
And so I have to ask, how is it that there are no landing costs and we're still not going to get cheaper fuel?
Okay. Great question, Sandra. Let's talk about what the cost component of the petroleum price is.
Mm-hmm.
The main, and we talked about this earlier,
mm-hmm.
The main component is crude,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So crude, the price of crude will significantly influence the cost of petroleum products.
Mm-hmm.
So 50 something, this is US price components, but between 59% to 68%
mm-hmm.
up to that is the cost of crude. The other component which also makes up their pricing element is the refinery margin. So when you pass the crude through the refineries,
mm-hmm.
the refinery has to process it. There are certain costs associated with a refinery actually distilling the crude and bringing out different petroleum products.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to make money,
mm-hmm.
and so that cost is attached to the refinery.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, there is the cost of transportation, distribution, and marketing,
mm-hmm.
right? And in the US and in other sort of developed markets, there's also the cost of tax, because
mm-hmm.
there's a significant tax element to the cost of crude,
mm-hmm.
To the cost of petroleum products.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, if you're already making between 59 and possibly almost 75% mm-hmm. is between the cost of crude and the cost of refining.
Mm-hmm.
So all together.
Mm-hmm.
The other element of transportation
mm-hmm.
is only it's only a small portion.
Mm.
I mean, if you looked at the pricing template that PPPRA used to issue, NMDPRA, which is now the regulatory authority
mm-hmm.
For the downstream, midstream and downstream sector,
mm-hmm.
The last one they issued was March 2022 or 2021, I'm not sure which one. But if you looked at the cost elements of that pricing template, and all of those were regulated costs, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But if you looked at the price element of that, 75% of that pricing template was from the cost of petroleum products.
Mm-hmm.
75%.
Mm.
And they still had lots of other costs that were there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you looked at the cost of freight, the cost of transportation,
mm-hmm.
it was, I don't know, insignificant. Comparatively, it was less than 10%. Perhaps I could go as far as saying it was less than 5%.
Hmm.
So in terms of the feedback, obviously there will be some differences here and there. But in terms of the feedback, what the cost of transportation, the movement from Europe to Nigeria,
mm-hmm.
what that cost, how that would have affect the value
mm-hmm.
of the ultimate PMS that you're getting,
mm-hmm.
I suspect it's going to be insignificant, just as the GMD and MPC said.
Mm. Okay. Lagos, join the conversation. 0700-993-993-993-01465-7190. You know, I like that you're saying this, because I said the exact same thing and people wanted to have my head. So I'm curious.
I'm
curious to see if they're going to have your head.
Yeah.
We've got WhatsApp 080-959-75805. Thanks for calling. What's your name, sir?
Good evening.
What's your name?
This is Pastor Ladipa.
Welcome, Pastor Ladipa.
From Riligo.
You've got 1 minute. Go ahead.
I want to ask one question.
Okay.
Among all the things that they are stealing or that is costing us money, why is it that it's only this fuel subsidy that is their problem? Why are we not talking about the severance packages for the National Assembly? Can't we also block some leakages from that place? It's painful that the only thing that is trickling down to the common mass, they are blocking it. Let them go ahead. No problem. It is well.
All right, Pastor Ladipo, thank you very much. I'm going to take another call and then we'll address both questions. Hi, how are you? What's your name, ma'am?
Joy.
Joy, welcome. Talk to me.
Okay, please, I want to ask our guest, can you explain to us how Angola recently removed subsidy from the affair? Was it just once? Was there anything they did? Has he done any research on that? Then again, the subsidy that was taken off during the time of Ibikachuku, what happened when it was increased to 145? Yeah, I remember that period.
Mm-hmm.
Then last, the subsidy taken off from diesel and kerosene, what happened to that money? That differential that no subsidy on those two products.
Mm.
What happened to those monies? Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. So, Adeoye.
Thanks. Thank you to Pastor Ladipo and to Joy.
Mm-hmm.
Very insightful question. So, should the government also block leakages? Absolutely. I think that it is clear that as clear as it is that the cost of subsidies is not
sustainable.
Thank you. As clear as it is, it's also clear that the cost of governance is not sustainable. And it's not just politicians.
Mm-hmm.
It's also civil service as well. It's a message I preach everywhere. Once you create a government institution, it can never run out of things to do.
Mm.
There's so many examples I can give, but let people not have my head today. But you have to have a hard look at the cost of governance. And you look at, I think, I can't remember what year it was, but we had the Orosai report ages ago.
2014, I believe.
Talking about essentially scrapping, merging, removing certain government agencies. But since that time, a number of additional agencies have been created. And it seems to me, every time you read a bill that has come out, one out of every five bills has a new government agency being created. And that causes, it's not good for ease of doing business, it's not good for the cost of governance. And, you know, that certainly has to change. Mm. And I think that that's one of the things that we, as a people, must continue to let our voices be loud about. We cannot tolerate, a heavy cost of governance. So I agree with Pastor Ladipo on that. In terms of Angola, look, Angola recently did the same. I don't know that whether Angola removed its subsidy all at once. Or it has done it in phases. But again, you have to remember that we have, at the moment, different political dynamics and probably different fiscal balances as well. Our situation is particularly dire and it could get worse. And frankly, the argument for removal of subsidy, there was an expectation amongst people that worked in the industry that the subsidy should have been removed May 29, 2015.
That's right.
2015, that's or right. Even some would even go earlier than that. And so the timing for each country will be different. But if you look at our neighboring countries, if you look at Ghana, which also produces some oil, you look at, Benin Republic, all of them are operating with, technically a non-subsidized regime. Mm-hmm. Indeed, there are lots of reports about how our removal of subsidy is now affecting the petroleum products prices, mm-hmm, in, you know, neighboring countries. Mm-hmm. And obviously we all know why that's, mm-hmm, the case. It's, mm-hmm, smuggling and mm-hmm, things like that. Joy also asked about what happened to the
other subsidies.
These other subsidies. So let's put our situation in context. First, diesel, the subsidy around diesel has been removed for quite some time now. I think it may have been as far back as 2006 or something like that. And same thing with kerosene, that's all gone. But you know, the thing is, this money is not, it's not like this money is there somewhere waiting to
being
be used.
Being saved, yes.
Or being saved. Because the reality is that we actually don't have the money to fund our everyday needs. And so I don't know if there's a pot set aside. In fact, I'm pretty sure there isn't a pot set aside from savings that is made from subsidy. Indeed, I am not sure. Again, I don't speak for the government, but if I understand all the picture that has been painted by the former government and the current government, I don't know if we have money that is going to be set aside particularly for the payment of the subsidy, because we are borrowing to pay the subsidy. Joy also talked about, you know, the various other subsidy regime. I think you have to come to the fact.
So why have the prices changed? And each time the price has changed, we've been told, oh, they removed subsidy or the something.
Let's look at this. The price of a product, if we face facts, the price of products are not static.
Hmm.
The first thing is that you're importing this product, so it's definitely linked to your foreign exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Someone would tell you that in 2015, where the dollar was 180. The same dollar that we're using to import the petroleum products.
Good old days.
I'm not going to talk about the grey market, but the rate is certainly not for something. Mm-hmm. It's very much north of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a factor, mm-hmm, that affects. And of course, it's demand and supply and the law of economics.
Mm-hmm.
It has an effect on the petroleum, on the prices of petroleum products.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the same here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same anywhere else in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that the market is teaching us right now is that it can go up and it can come down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a good example is the diesel market. There was a time, not quite long ago, that we're buying diesel at almost 800.
900.
800, 900.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time that it went as high as 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
But the prices have come down. They've moderated because it is a reflection of what the international market is. Similarly, gas prices, which went up to as high as, I think, cooking gas, that is,
mm-hmm.
went up to as high as 13,000.
Mm-hmm.
I hear has now come down to 6,004 or 6,005.
So has it?
I've heard that.
Okay.
So it, the market is teaching us that it works. It goes up, it comes down, is a reflection
of... So let the market determine what the price will be.
Yes.
With that said, do you think that if we had our own refineries, because the biggest debate I have with the listeners of Hard Facts is that our refineries will not solve the problem. The refineries have already gulped way too much money. The experts will tell you that those refineries should be scrapped up, should be broken down into scraps and sold off. You have, but you have people who push back and who say, no, let's fix the refineries. We fix the refineries, we fix this problem. The problem is that we're importing the fuel.
Yeah.
We have four refineries. How can our refineries not be working? The refineries are the answer. They're the answer, Sandra. They're the answer. We've got 1 minute. Are they the answer?
No.
Okay.
Look, we've had the refinery challenge for quite a long. We've done turnaround maintenance under several governments. I remember very clearly when the Obasanjo government sold, I think it was Port Harcourt Refinery and another refinery to Dangote at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody went all in arms. He's not paying enough, blah, blah, blah. 2007. Till date, those refineries are not working. Each year, they're recording losses. I'm not telling
And we're
you,
pumping more money.
We're pumping more money
Borrowed
into
money.
The refineries, right? So there's the feasibility of the refineries working in the first place. But even if they do come on stream, here's the point. You have to, the refineries will also use, they will be maintained. They will have to be maintained. Those refineries will have spare parts. Those spare parts will be bought on using foreign exchange. The refineries have to earn money. And if the refineries are going to earn money, they've got to charge a commercial rate, a market rate. So if you're charging a market rate, how will you be different? I think the challenge is that we don't believe in general that we should pay what the market says.
It's paying because we have our own crude. Why should we pay expensively when we own the crude?
We're not the largest producer in the world is the US. They have their own crude. And yet there's no subsidy in the market. Obviously, there are other countries. Saudi Arabia has a bit of a subsidy. But again...
But they're also wealthier per capita.
They are far ahead of us.
So we're poor. Therefore, we need the subsidy.
We cannot... Per capita, they are far ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
But we can also not afford it as a nation. So you can look at the arguments that way. Benin Republic is right next to you. Its GDP per capita is poorer than you, poorer than us as a nation, yet they don't have a subsidy.
All right, let's leave it at that. Adeoye Adefulu is a lawyer in the oil and gas sector, and he has done such a stellar job talking to us about subsidy removal on the show. Yes, I know there wasn't enough time to really get into all of it, but I will beg him once we get off air to come back and talk to us about it again, because I had a lot more questions to ask and I couldn't get to all those questions. Don't go away, Lagos.